Erev Shabbat Shalom. Parshat Ki Tetzé. Last week's parsha emphasized mostly questions of how to organize a polity, government institutions, government functioning, things like that. This week's parsha is a real potpourri, a real mélange of all kinds of rules and regulations regarding personal morality and government morality and courts and war and laws of war, and everything's all mixed up together. There doesn't seem to be, at the first glance, there doesn't seem to be any thematic unity involved. And that's, I think, one thing to discuss at your Shabbat table or wherever you have the opportunity to discuss the parsha. But the truth of the matter is, it may very well be, and maybe as with entropy, if I understand what entropy means, as with entropy, the chaos or the lack of consistency, lack of thematic unity, may be the point. In other words, the fact that the Torah here jumps from mitzvah to mitzvah, from prohibition to prohibition, in so many different areas, sends one clear signal, and that is that the Torah is an integrated whole. That it's not to be treated as a, the fabled menu at a Chinese restaurant where you pick over here, you pick from column A, you pick from column B, and so on. But rather, it's an integrated whole, and the Torah is just as interested and demands allegiance and fealty and observance of laws that are of obvious import. Laws that relate to one's objective circumstances of all kinds of ways, and things that perhaps are harder to understand. It's all one piece. That it actually speaks to the fact that if there is one enterprise that the Parsha raises, and raises very sharply, that is the question of what is the rationale for the commandments. Some of the mitzvot some of the prohibitions especially that are mentioned here are really easy to understand. The fact that if you are, for example, there's a rule that if you, if a person comes into lends money from you, and they give their clothing as a surety, they pawn their clothing, but they're going to need their clothing to be able to sleep or go out in the street and so on, then the person who lent the money has the obligation to make sure that they have their minimum equipment to be able to live, and take something else in surety, and take out something else in pawn, and to do so in a way which respects the dignity of the person who had to borrow the money. Not something that usually happens in the world of high finance, but the Torah here is very careful that this is something that should be done. And there are all kinds of cases like that. On the other hand, there were many mitzvot in this parsha which are more difficult to understand. There is the question of the rebellious son who is turned over for execution by his parents. Although, and it's on the books, even though according to the rabbis, it never was applied, but it's there. So why should it be there? There is the question of the status of the mamzer, of the person who is a child. A mamzer is not an illegitimate child. A mamzer is a child born of a prohibited union, where the prohibition is of the most severe kind. So, for example, a child that's born of adultery, a child that is born of incest, is a mamzer and cannot marry another Jew. He can marry another mamzer, or he can marry a convert, which is also raises issues. I thought we were supposed to be, democratic. And the question, it's a serious moral question. What's the reason for that? What was the sin that was committed by this child? I mean, why should the child suffer for the sins of the parents? On the contrary. The Torah says explicitly in this parsha that the children should not suffer for the sins of the parents. Ish bechato yumat. Everybody should bear the brunt of the responsibility of their own actions. So these are real serious issues that need to be related, needed to be discussed. And it's interesting. So that's one of the challenges which the Parsha gives us. And a lot of the commentaries address them forthright. We don't try to hide the fact that we have difficulty understanding certain mitzvot and why they're there and so on. And in fact, if I can put a commercial in, I put a plug in for one of the really most wonderful initiatives on the internet today, and that is for website called Al HaTorah, alhatorah.org. It's run by Rabbi Hillel and Nama Novetsky, and it is a treasure trove in English and Hebrew of commentaries, of guided readings, of insight into not just the Chumash, but the entire classical Jewish library. And I noticed that one of the things they have on their website is a section devoted to themes that arise from the weekly Torah reading, with guiding questions and with possible answers derived from various commentaries. And I highly, highly recommend it. The two, I recommend that you go there and you can see this. You can have the beginnings of the kinds of discussion they mentioned. But I want to actually raise a broader issue and not just concentrate on any one passage, but not on any one mitzvah in the Parsha. As I said, the fact that there is such a potpourri of apparently multi-thematic comments and commandments in this Parsha, you know, raises the issue of, you know, some of them we can understand, some of them we can't. They're all binding. That's, I think, it really is what the point is in the way that this Parsha is organized. But some of them we can't understand. And that raises the question, an age-old question, goes back to the rabbis, is, are there reasons for commandments? Are there ta'amei mitzvah? Now, this is something which sounds really interesting. I'd love to know, would love to know the answer. But it's a really loaded issue. It's hard to believe, but it's a really loaded issue. And the reason it's a loaded issue, well, you know what? Let's start with one of the ones which is the most popular in our Parsha. Get the specs out. This is chapter 22, verse 6. Ki karei kan sipor lefanecha. If it happens that you're wandering in the woods and you find a bird's nest in front of you, obviously a kosher bird, becholeitz o'ala aretz, it's either on a tree or on the ground, and in the nest are efrochim, they're either little birds, or beitzim, or eggs, va'em rovetzet ala efrochim, and you see that the mother is actually sitting on top of the eggs, or on top of the chicks. Lo tikacha im ala banim. Don't take both the mother or the children or the little birds or the eggs. Shaleach tishalach et ha'em ve'et ha'banim tikach lach. Send away the mother, then you can take the eggs, then you can take the goslings, the ducklings, whatever you have there. Laman yitav lach v'arach te'amim, so that things could go well with you and you should live a long life. Now, that's a very, very ambitious, you know, reward to give to a seemingly minor rule. And yet it's a mitzvah that has always been very, very charming, because, God's even worried about a bird. He's even worried about the sensitivities of a bird, of a mother, who will probably forget about these eggs like 2 seconds from now, but you can't, we're worried about the sentiments of the bird right now, of the mother. Except that the Talmud, the Mishnah in Shaktei Brachot says that if a person in their prayers says something like, "You are so merciful, O God, that you are even concerned with the sensitivities of a mother bird in her nest," you're not allowed to, then you have to dismiss that person. That such a prayer is not allowed to be offered. Why is that? How come? So the rabbi, so that's Mishnah. Two Amoraim, two later sages in the Talmud, offer different explanations. One, Mipnei Shemetil Kina B'Maseh Bereshit, because it seems to, it would indicate that God cares more about the birds than about all of other creation. Now, if you go through the whole Torah, you see God cares about all of creation. He cares about all of his animals. He cares about the economy. He cares about ecology. He cares about the environment. So the fact that there's one rule that relates to birds, that's okay. But to highlight that one, to say that God cares about one part of creation more than others, that's inappropriate. And the other, but for our purposes, it's the other explanation, which is more significant. And that is that because it assumes that God, that there's a reason why God gives his, commands us of certain things, in this case, in order to teach us compassion, to teach us mercy, and ve'enan ela gezerot, and they're really just blind decrees. What the second rabbi is saying, and they were appear there, but we don't know exactly who said it, at least according to Talmud there. The point that's being raised is that if you think to assume that you know why a commandment was given, why a prohibition was given, is to presume to know the mind of God, which is what, as the last line in Stephen Hawking's Introduction to Time, it goes. We can't know the mind of God. We only accept what God says, and that's it. We are blind obedient. Blindly obedient. We obey. We salute, and that's all. This is an opinion. This is an approach to observance, which is mostly associated with the late Yeshayahu Leibovitz, who said, don't ask any questions, just do what you do, blind obedience, and that's it. This opinion, which actually was advocated by Rashi, of blind obedience, just do it, don't ask any questions, was very much opposed, especially in the Spanish and Portuguese Jewish world, in the Sephardic world, on the grounds that God wants us to use our minds. God wants us to use our brains. He wants to use our hearts when it comes to observing. Maimonides was emphatic that there are definitely, God would not give a mitzvah or prohibit something for no blind, non-accessible reason. But rather, there must be a reason. God is wise. A perfect being would not give something that's just purposeless, he says in the Guide for the Perplexed. There must be a reason, and we are obligated to uncover those reasons. So it's very nice. Okay, that sounds very open and intellectual. The problem is that Maimonides, and he was quickly accused of this, by saying that there's an identifiable reason to a commandment, opens up the possibility of what's called antinomism. In other words, that if you presume to know what a reason for commandment is, then you could say, well, okay, who needs the commandment? I know I should be compassionate, so I don't need the bird. I don't need all this other stuff. I can just go and avoid what the Torah ultimately intended, and I don't need to be bound by the law. So Maimonides has all kinds of ways, this is for a longer discussion, Maimonides has all kinds of ways of reinforcing the obligation and by saying that we should be careful and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, this is really the Achilles heel of his system. But the idea that we should try to learn something and try to come close to understand why we have commandments is legitimate. However, the danger of antinomism, of people saying, well, you know, kashrut is so I can be healthy, so I'll eat healthy. Everybody says, well, we all know, as it were, that the reason why Jews don't eat pork is because of trichinosis, and now we know that you don't have to have trichinosis because you can boil it, you can cook it. I don't know anything about cooking pork, but they say you can actually cook it without being sick, so we can just have our pork, and we know better than the Torah. We hear this all the time. That was then, this is now, we know what God had in mind, all kinds of antinomian ideas. So the question is, does that mean we should just say salute and go ahead, or not? So the middle, but there are certainly still plenty of people And this includes mystics and philosophers who presume to give you the reason for the commandments. With that caveat, with that understanding that there is a certain danger involved, or a certain risk you're taking if you want to maintain the integrity of the Torah. The middle position was offered by Nachmanides. Nachmanides was very much part of his Spanish, Mizrahi, Sephardic world. He rejected Rashi's. He says, on this point, on this passage, and I recommend it very highly. It's a very, very resonant and repercussive passage. He says, on the one hand, he rejects summarily the idea that God would offer us commandments that for which there's no reason. What's the word I'm looking for? You do something, just like that. Arbitrary. They're not arbitrary. God can't be arbitrary. The God that we believe in cannot be arbitrary. On the other hand, who are we to presume to know the mind of God? There is an arrogance. There was a great arrogance in, Hawking. There's a tremendous arrogance saying, I know the mind of God. How can you know the mind of God? I mean, it's beyond, we can't, if you really try, for example, just to, I do this myself sometimes, try to figure out how far is a light year? Well, it's easy to figure out the distance, right? Because you go, whatever it is, I can't remember the number. Whatever is 100 next Y and Z miles per second, and then you go per second by times 60 times 60 times 24 times 365 and a quarter. So that's how you get the. But who can ever comprehend such distances? So that would be the ultimate. That's the ultimate. So this is like Nachmanides. That would be to claim to know what God God intended by giving each mitzvah would be pretentious. Would be arrogance of the worst sort. However, without presuming to know why God gave the mitzvah, it is perfectly legitimate to sit there and say, what do I learn from it? What can I, in my own limited way, take from any given mitzvah? So here, he says, yeah, I don't know why God gave this mitzvah. Maybe it had to do with preservation of species. Who knows? But I know that by wanting to go and to take into consideration the feelings of the mother bird, I know that I learned compassion. I know that I can argue very, make the straightforward argument and say, you know what? If this mitzvah is bringing me to have compassion on a bird, on a chicken, on a duck, then all the more so should I have compassion and feel empathy with my fellow man, or with man or woman. It's not why did God do it, but what does it teach me? Which means that actually it's very empowering that the assuming that the Torah is there to be a positive influence on us, and we interact with it. Asking us to the Torah, then the act of looking for reasons for the commandments is then a mandate to interact, to bring ourselves, everything we know and everything we don't know, to interact and to respond to the mitzvot out of an attempt to be able to find meaning therein that would enrich our lives. So not every Tom mitzvah is going to be the same. Everybody's going to find the same meaning in every mitzvah. And some of them will say, you know, I really don't know. I'm willing to say, I don't know. Which is the height of human humility and the height of human greatness to realize the limits of our understanding. And that could mean I don't know and it really bothers me. But it's, again, as I say all the time, human life, the life of the believer is the life of a mix, a balance between intellectual daring and intellectual humility and spiritual humility. So, there are lots of mitzvahs, lots of challenges in this parsha to go through and to ask yourself those questions, and giving you plenty of homework to do. And we'll see you next time. Shabbat shalom. Baruch.